Richard Herncastle begins an account of his life on stage between November 1913 to August 1914 in one of J.B. Priestley's most memorable post-war novels. Tom Baker stars in Lost Empires.
Cover your eyes.
Master, no!
You dare plead for mercy after you've touched what is mine.
Again!
After you've defiled her beauty.
No!
Learn what it means to fall foul of Ganga Dun. Go from my sight! Disappear!
The Classic Serial, Lost Empires by J.B. Priestley, dramatized for radio by Bert Coombs. Episode 1, Overture and Beginners.
Have you ever noticed the way the past comes curving back at you, as if you weren't getting further and further away from it, but coming nearer? My wife doesn't feel it.
You'd think a woman might.
She doesn't. The past is dead and done with as far as she's concerned. She doesn't suddenly taste it the way I do.
Ensure and certain hope of the resurrection to eternal life still to come, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Mr. Herncastle.
To explain how my Uncle Nick asked me to join him, I have to go back to my mother's funeral.
October 1913. A raw day with not much light about.
Mr. Herncastle.
Sorry. Dust to dust.
We look like a lot of figures in an old engraving.
Amen.
Amen.
It was a kind of Christmas gone mad.
I'd only ever seen most of them before at Christmas. Ancient relatives. The coffin had vanished, they dried their eyes, and now they were beginning to enjoy themselves. I have no feeling left.
You don't want to stay here with this lot, do you, lad?
No, I didn't.
No, don't, Uncle Nick.
Right, you come with me. Come on, then. Paul Roger, sick, in an ice bucket.
Mr. Rollinson, isn't it? Not on here this week, are you?
Manchester, and I won't have to be too long getting back there, so sharp as you can.
Yep. Champagne, Uncle Nick.
Never drink anything but... Oh, it's not showing off. I like champagne, and it likes me, and if I can't afford champagne, I'll drink nothing. Care for a cigar, lad?
Oh, no, thanks. I'll stick to my pipe, if you don't mind.
Uncle Nick. My mother's only brother, but I hardly knew him. Whenever he was appearing in Leeds or Bradford, he always sent Mother and me passes for the stalls. First house. So when we went round to see him, he'd still be in his makeup.
I'd hardly ever seen him without it.
There you are, gentlemen.
Don't go for a minute.
Mr. Linton.
Give you a free show. Got a halfpenny, one of you?
I have. Yes.
Right. Now mark it so you'll know it again.
Mark it out.
Scratch something on it. Right across it. Use your brains, lad.
Right. There. How's that?
Good enough. Drop it in my hand.
There.
Now, watch. Where's the coin, eh?
Well, it's in your fist, of course, Mr. Ollington. Wish I could get
what do you
to
say, young Richard?
Well, it's in your fist.
Is it? Anta, manta, janta, yadu.
Oh, that's clever. Never saw it go, did you, Lord?
No, not a flicker. What is it, Uncle Nick?
Well, now. Well, just stare at it, lad. Open it. You'll need this.
Right. There we are. Another box.
Are you waiting for instructions?
No, of course not. What's inside this one?
Oh, another box. I'd lay money on it.
You'd lose.
A bag?
Anything in it?
My apron.
Oh, that's clever. My word, that is clever, Mr. Ollington.
I have dozens of them. The only thing that amuses me nowadays. Right, show's over.
Oh, right, yes, sir. Oh, very clever.
Now, I want to talk to you, lad, but we'll have a drink first.
Didn't like the champagne.
Still don't.
I pretended to be enjoying it, and I looked across to Uncle Nick. Even without the makeup, what I saw staring back at me was the sinister glare of Ganga Dunn, the Maharaja of mystery.
I don't often come across stage people nowadays, and when I do, they look like anybody else. But in 1913, they seem like specimens of an alien race.
Now, Richard, I want to know how you stand, what you're doing and what you'd like to be doing.
I want to be a painter. Watercolours mostly.
You're a clerk in an office.
I'm getting 22 and 6 a week now.
You don't like it.
Oh, I hate it.
Your father died, your mother needed the money, you did what you could.
Yeah?
Well, now your mother's gone, you've got no girl expecting to marry her, eh?
Oh, no.
And there's no other ties to this place?
None at all. But, Uncle Mate, what's all this in aid of?
You can have a job with me. £5 a week.
£5 a week?
£5 a week? And you chaps who lived the life of men about town on far less than £5 a week. What could I possibly do?
That would be worth so
don't
much.
Don't get any wrong ideas, lad. This is business. You'll earn your money, and you'll be free in the daytime to do your painting.
But what would I have to do, and could I do it? I don't know anything about conjuring.
Don't talk silly, lad. You'll be a sort of general assistant. You'll come in on the act.
I'm a stage.
No, it's dead easy. You'll make sure all our stuff gets away and arrives at the next
place. It's a different theatre every week,
theater,
is it?
It's a different town, same act, same idiots in the audience. Now, can I finish?
Oh, of course.
Right. You look after our stuff, and you'll take the band calls, and when I think you're up to it, you'll take charge of the other four.
And who are they?
Who do you think they are? Alexander's Ragtime Band. Just shut up and listen. There's Norman Hislop, the one you'll be replacing, Sam and Ben the mechanics, the girl, the one I've got now is called Sissy Mapes, and there's Barney. He's a dwarf. Well, lad, what do you say?
Let's have a song upon the gramophone that Billy Williams sings so grand. With his save a little one for me and Johnny get your gun. And let's all go down the strand to have a tomato. John, put your trousers on, we're waiting for a girl. And it jolly well serves you right. Oh, tickle me, Timothy, said Jean from Aberdeen, 'cause I must go home tonight.
It lasted the remainder of the week, that feeling of unreality and emptiness, when one familiar world is melting away and the next one's not yet closed round.
I was 20 and had never been away from home except for occasional weeks at the seaside and one visit to London.
On Sunday, still half dreaming, in a train which didn't seem to want to go there, I went to Newcastle.
I don't know what he's like as an uncle, but he's an hard sod to work for. You'll soon find that out.
Norman Hislop, the man I was replacing, a long nose and a slack mouth. The kind that smokes a cigarette as if it were part of a dud conspiracy.
You can't please him because he doesn't want to be pleased. All he likes is frightening people.
Isn't that just the way he looks and maybe the way he talks?
What's behind the looks and the talk? He doesn't like people. If they don't like him so much, the better. To hell with him. You see for yourself soon enough.
Yeah, I'll see for myself.
Of course, it's clever. Anyone will tell you that. But they'll also tell you the damn glad when he's not around.
Even our little sissy. She's the girl in the act, right?
Not just in the act. Don't try anything there, not if you want to keep the job. She's his. And she's terrified of him. Oh, come on, we're up next.
Right, then nothing till the boss comes down centre front. He says, learn what it means to fall foul of Ganga Dun. He points at the slave and the gong starts to build.
Band call, every Monday morning. Hislop explained it to me as if he were 100 years old and I was about 13.
Each theatre has its own orchestra, see, so every time we get to a new place, we have a sort of skeleton rehearsal with them. I tell them what happens on stage.
And where they have to play the music.
You have to make sure they've got the right band part.
And the conductor understands the cue.
Because if anything goes wrong...
And don't think the boss won't notice.
However small it is...
Then old Nick will burn you up.
Nephew.
The slave cries out in agony, the boss yells, go from my side, disappear, and bang. It disappears, plus, and then it's just a playoff.
The first
day,
gentlemen.
According to Hislop, Uncle Nick never went near a band call. He hated conductors. So, of course, they hated him.
I'll
tell the boss. Or he will.
I was going to be doing it on my own next week.
Ah, there you are, lad.
Uncle.
My nephew, Richard Erncastle, Mr. C. Napes, and this is Sam Hayes and his son Ben, my mechanics.
That's me, Mr. Alton, don't forget me.
Gosh, Barney. I'm Barney, that's the only name he's got.
That's right, the only name I've got.
Quiet.
Sorry, Mr. Alton.
Well, I'm pleased to meet you all. Miss Mapes.
Hello, Richard.
Mr. Hayes.
Sam.
Sam. Ben.
Hello.
And Barney.
Mr. Erncastle.
Let's have a look at those plans, Sam.
Yes, sir. Give them here, boy.
Right to the end, I was always glad that I had Sam and Ben working with me. But we never became friends. There are some people who never seem quite real. Sam and Ben Hayes were like that. I couldn't ever imagine them away from their work, on their own, living their lives. As for Barney... Well, my working life at West Brothersford spinning mill hadn't exactly prepared me for the likes of him. I tried not to stare, and probably didn't exactly succeed.
We're busy, lad. Working out a new illusion, you're no use to us. How was the band call?
All right, I'll be able to cope next week once I know exactly how the act goes.
I hope so. I'm expecting better things from you than I ever got from young Hislop. He's lazy and he's half-witted and he's going off to join his brother in some fish and chip business. Which is more than he's fit for. Knock off that port and lemon girl. Mm-hmm. Right. You can go with him and show him his jigs. Feeling hungry, lad?
Yes.
Then go and eat, both of you, but not at my expense. And don't come back, I'm too busy.
Do you like any? Come on, Richard.
Lad?
Hi, Uncle.
Lad?
Yeah?
I want you in front tonight for the first house. I'll make sure they pass you in. Sit through the whole show. Got to help you.
I've got you a room in my house next to us. I'll take you there after.
Thanks.
Nick says you want to be an artist, is that right?
A painter, yeah.
You want to paint me sometime?
Well, not that kind of painting. I want to do landscapes.
Oh, same.
Well, I might try a sketch of you one day.
Oh, yes, please.
I did try it. And I still have that sketch when so much, a whole world of more than half a century is gone. And although it's terrible, I've only to give it a glance to see and hear Sissy Mapes again.
I like meeting in places like this. Not too posh. Tell you, Dick. I'm going to call you Dick. You must know his wife.
No, I only met her once, about 4 years ago.
She's fat as a pig now, he says. And gives her £10 a week to stay away from him. If he saw me eating this, he'd throw it across the room.
Why?
It's just if I put on weight, I'll be out in the action. You aren't telling me, is it? All right, I told you what to say.
Of course not.
Promise me. You won't tell him anything I'll say. Ever. Solemn promise.
I promise.
I didn't know what you'd be like. I was worried.
Sissy.
You're nice. You're really nice. Just a little bit naughty, eh? Oh, yeah, I can always tell.
What did he mean about the show tonight? God help me.
First half Monday.
Yeah?
Oh, you don't know, do you? It's the worst day of the week. It's all people who get free tickets to put up posters and stuff like that. Nick says they're not there because they want to be, just because they think they shouldn't waste a seat. The best ass man is always awful.
When they thought of the hiding we'd get, they cried, and so did the 23rd. Oh, the gallant old 23rd, we're the pride of the girly dears. When we parade, upon my word, this remark I've often heard, there's no mistake, the 23rd, they ought to have 20 years.
It might be the worst house of the week, but it was wonderful in a way to leave the darkening and chilly streets of Newcastle with their square black buildings and their menacing shadows and find myself sitting in the fourth row at the Empire. A lot's been written about the magic of the theatre, but it's always seemed to me very pale and thin compared to the warmer, deeper magic of the music hall. Part of the secret was that however big they were, the empires and the grands and the colosseums, they always seemed warm, cosy, and intimate. There was something richly feminine about the appeal, belonging half to some vastly tolerant mother and half to some bewitching mistress.
The first act was a fill-in for the Newcastle Week Only. A pair of trick cyclists. Of course, I wasn't interested in them, only in the permanent company, the people I'd be travelling with for the next few months. Between the playbills posted outside, Norman Hislop's sour comments, and Sissy's breathless revelations, I reckoned I had a good idea of what to expect. The Flying Colmars, France's first family of the air.
One of those acts where a load of men stand on each other's shoulders and chuck a girl around a lot.
Wait till you see the girl. Talk about stomach.
Thank you very much, Maestro, if you please.
Harry G. Burrard, eccentric comedian, the Diddy-Udo man.
He called me a common little tart when I told him to take his hands off me. But I felt sorry for him after. He was drunk. And anyway, I don't think he's all there.
That stuff was out the day before we were born. Putrid.
Then the last act before the interval, bottom of the bill.
Which, as Uncle Nick was always at pains to explain, actually meant second to top of the bill. Ganga Dunn, the magnificent Maharaja of Mystery.
There was no doubt about it. Uncle Nick was a superb showman. Even the stolid, fat deadhead sitting around me, waiting for death rather than entertainment, were not entirely unimpressed.
I'd seen the act before, of course, but I watched it now with new and keener eyes, and it was
Wonderful.
Oh. Learn what it means to fall foul of Ganga Dun. Go from my sight. Disappear.
Oh, wonderful act. One of the best. That's what it?
Yes, please, Mr. Magsy.
Part of that, George, and usual for me. Yes, sir, wonderful act. I've seen it, 30 times. I still don't know how it's done. Any of it. You do, I suppose.
Well, I'm not allowed to say it.
No, I suppose not. You can tell him from me, I noticed he cut 3 minutes. That's naughty. Very naughty. I'm supposed to report him to head office for that. Yeah. That being one of my duties as house manager, you understand?
I'm with you, though, Mr.
Well, I know he never do it to a full house. Huh, here we are.
Thank you.
No, he's a great showman, Nicolaton, but he can't be naughty. Very naughty. Good health. Enjoy the second half. Let's see if you can't get the applause going a bit.
Riccardo, Italy's greatest juggler.
He's got a good turn. Is it quite so much out and not much fun there?
He's nice. Nothing polite.
Susie, Nancy and a Gentleman. Melodies in the Moonlight.
Song and dance tune. Pretty good if you know that sort of thing. Yeah, the sisters.
Susie's married to the pianist. Bob Hodgson. She does most of the dancing and Nancy does the singing. Wish I had a voice like that.
That was a scrumptious bit. And the legs. There's nothing doing there. I tried.
Susie, Nancy and a Gentleman. The act conveyed something that seemed to vanish from the world not long afterwards. Something I never again found. A kind of young and innocent gaiety without any sort of depth in it, but somehow enchanting and lingering. Later, when everything was different and fragments of the song returned to my mind, I was at once haunted by a bright lost world that had taken my own youth with it.
If you will be mine. And as for that Nancy,
so pert and saucy and yet somehow so innocent,
I began to fall in love with her there and then.
Keep them and be true. When I'm a man, my plan will be to marry.
I'm so worried about my poor little Fifi.
There, there, my child. I'm sure it's nothing to worry your pretty head about.
But her little tail won't wag, and her little ears won't prick up at all.
Well, I have sent for the finest vet in the district. Let us await him inside.
I do hope everything will be all right. I mean, however would I manage without my fluffy little Fifi?
Tommy Beamish, the clown prince of chaos.
Hey, well, this is a posh road and no mistake. Hey, there's some money here. Let's hope one of them's got a job for me. Now, which house looks like it needs a plumber? Eeny, meeny, miny, that one. Well, here we go.
I don't care if he is top of the bill, it doesn't amuse me.
He works with an old actor called Hubert Courtney. where his shed's been. And with a woman, Julie Blaine. She lives with him, they say.
Oh, wherever can he be, this vet? I wish he'd hurry up and get there. Here. Oh, thank goodness.
Nice house. Oh, good day, miss.
Thank heaven you're here at last.
Beg pardon?
It's a real emergency, you see.
What a bit of luck. I see, and what exactly is the trouble?
Well...
You're here.
Just in the nick of time, I understand.
Good God! It's that serious, is it?
Well, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, I'd better get straight to work then, hadn't I? No time to lose.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
No time to lose. What's the problem exactly? Oh, it's that bad, eh?
Come here! My man!
Yes, sir.
What the devil's doing here? You understand?
Yes.
Good fella! Must understand that my daughter is suffering.
I can see she is.
She's been waiting hours for you to get here.
Well, it's the bus. They're terribly slow, you know.
And now she's absolutely desperate.
Oh! Say no more, sir.
You understand?
Completely. What you've got is something seriously amiss in the Houses of Parliament.
I really don't see what Mr. Asquith has to do with it.
Very droll, sir. Very, very droll. No, I am fully conversant with the situation. Something wrong. Young lady desperate. Quick relief required.
Exactly.
Well, I must say, in an house this size, I thought you had more than one.
More than one? We have 14.
14? Well, come cheer
on. But this one is her favourite.
Oh, I see. Well, I'd best get straight down to her, hadn't I?
Good man. Oh, one thing.
Yes?
She calls it Fifi.
Fifi?
Fifi?
Well, I've heard of course some funny things, but never Fifi. Right away, sir. All right, miss. I understand everything now.
Oh, thank goodness.
Soon have you right as rain. Oh, no, forget I said that. Soon have you home and dry.
It will be a great weight off my mind.
Yes, I don't suppose there's much wrong. Probably just something nasty causing an obstruction down where you can't see it.
Oh!
You'd be amazed the things I found blocking up the tubes in cases like this.
Oh!
I'll just sort out my equipment.
Oh!
Now, yes, the very thing. Leave me to Fifi!
Leave me to Fifi.
For God's sake, shut up.
Uncle Nick, you don't like Tommy Beamish?
I don't like him, and he doesn't like me.
Oh.
I've no truck with comedians. They have to pretend to be even sillier than the people that are watching them. After a time, it does something to their brains. Did you say to the end?
Oh, no, after Tommy Beamish, I'd had enough.
Didn't miss much. I fill in clothes with those damn bioscope pictures. How's the act looking?
Oh, better than ever. But why did he cut 3 minutes?
You've been talking to that damn fool Mags. What did he say? Can be naughty, very naughty, I suppose.
Yeah, it did.
Let him. I cut the floating ball. Why should I waste one of my best effects on an audience of blockheads? You'll see it second house. From the wings this time. What about the last illusion, the visible vanish?
Oh, very good. Huh? It really does look as though the slave, or whatever he is, just disappears into thin air. Oh, Meg's wanted me to tell him how it's done.
Did you?
No, of course not.
Could you have?
I think so.
Huh. Go on, then.
Well, it all depends on the fact that this great tall slave is really barmy.
You realise he was a dwarf?
Oh, only because I've met him. The audience didn't know, I'd swear it.
All right, then. How does he disappear, in your opinion?
Well, I think he must be on some sort of, collapsible stilts. And when the flash goes off, he jumps off the stilts and he lays as flat as he can.
And the robes bunch up round him, you know, so he looks as though he's not there at all. Am I right? You know, it's a very convincing trick.
Dogs do tricks. I do illusions.
Sorry.
I designed a stilt myself. I'm glad you liked it.
It's not nice to be crude, so I've found another way. In place of words like ole, I use ditty ditty oozy oozy ditty oozy a. I'm an individual, a little bit original, and I'm here to kid you all.
If you'll attend, I'll tell a tale. Upon your head, I'll hit the nail with words to make the ladies pale. Betty, friend, and Murphy went into the town. Thought he'd like to get him a tattoo. The man said, on your arm, Pat, or maybe on your chest. Pat said, put it on my diddy diddy oo. And now a little poem that's entitled Little Boy, Pair of Skates, Broken Ice, Heaven's Gates. Thank you. Thank you. The poem that's entitled Don't Play in the Rain, Dad. The dog's got a bone up its beak. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Start the car. Thank you. Thank you. Master, if you please.
You don't enjoy him, do you, lad?
No, I don't.
They don't matter. Not anymore. This day's done and the poor booker knows it.
Look at his eyes when he comes up.
Put your eyes back, Cully. They might pop out.
Sorry.
Don't be, you might get a laugh.
Aye, aye, Captain. Aye, aye. Oh,
you're
foolish.
You were there
twice.
Yeah.
Was that Tommy Beamish?
Yes, it was.
But he sounded drunk.
Did he really? Excuse me.
It was strange watching it all again from the side of the stage, feeling now I was a part of it. As the flying Colmars had come up, the stunning girl...
Noni was the name I discovered.
Noni Colmar, who was obviously tremendously conscious of herself as a female, Noni Colmar, excited and smiling and with a wonderful burnish sheen of sweat, had brushed past me very close.
She could easily have avoided me. I felt as if sex had just been invented.
The atmosphere was thick and strong and heady, and the audience was bigger and livelier, and everything was different.
No! Learn what it means to fall foul of Ganga Dun. Go from my sight! Disappear!
Went well, didn't it?
It was wonderful, Uncle Nick. I promise you, here and now, I'll do everything I can for the act.
I hate this damn turban. Now get yourself on stage and make Islop show you what to do. You're having supper with us, eh? 11, another second later. Richard, I'll hold you to that promise.
I stayed in the wings for the second half. While Ricardo was juggling, I waited there for the next act to come on. For the moment when I'd see the girl Nancy again.
And suddenly, there she was. Hello. I saw your act at the first house. It's Miss Ellis, isn't it? Nancy Ellis. I'm Richard.
Excuse me.
Richard Herncastle, nice to meet you.
I tried hard not to enjoy their act again. Especially Nancy's part of it. But it didn't work. The magic took hold of me again, just like before. I moved away from the light and the enchantment, back into the shadows.
Are you one of the nuts?
Mr. Beamish, I'm really pleased.
Are you one of the nuts?
I don't think so.
Want to come in on my act?
No, of course
not. Then why don't you take a walk? We don't have to have you standing there, do we? You're not a farmer or a policeman, are you?
Oh, stop it, Tommy. You've probably got a perfectly good reason for being there, haven't you?
Well, if I'm in the way, I'll move. But I've just joined my uncle, Nick Collett.
Oh, one of my favourite colleagues, I don't think.
I wish he'd make himself disappear one of these nights.
Tommy, please.
Oh, put a sock in it. Tommy, please. Get yourself ready.
You mustn't mind Tommy. He's just being rather difficult tonight. What's your name?
Richard Herncastle.
I'm Julie Blaine.
I know. I was at the first house. I thought Tommy was marvellous. Oh, you were good too, Miss Blaine.
Thank you. It's not my kind of acting. You're joining your uncle's company?
Yeah, but I'm not really a pro. I'm trying to be a watercolour painter.
You're rather sweet. I must get ready. Everybody.
I'll be your sweetheart if you will be mine.
Fingers everywhere.
Eh?
I find it on the dining table the other day. Damned inconvenient.
You mean it roams around?
Let me ask you. How can a fella eat his dinner with one of those staring in the back?
Well, I can see that would be a bit of a problem, yes, sir. Great shades of Thomas Trapper. He was a famous plumber, you ignorant lot.
And then she got up there too and started carrying
on. Oh, I'm getting out of here. Nice meeting you.
You, sir, I'm a disgrace to your profession.
Now, just a minute. Just a minute. You bring me here with some cock and bull story about blockages that don't exist and wondering how your fathers and desperate daughters and their stupid silly pet names and chastising and prerogatives and daffodils and God knows what else besides. And now you have the gall to call my professional stature into disrepute. Well, I won't stand for it. I have the honour, sir, to bid you a very good morning.
Oh, Dick. I didn't know you smoked a pipe.
Well, obviously, see. I thought you'd have gone ages ago.
I had to fix one of the costumes. I like pipes. Much better than those old cigars Nick smokes. Why aren't you inside watching Tommy Beamish?
Oh, I don't know.
Hey, come on. Tell me.
Well, it's just... So, I don't know. Things aren't what I expected. Nah, that's not right. That's not what I mean.
You ever been backstage before?
Not while the show was on, no.
Everything's different, innit? Not like what you think it's gonna be.
Nah.
You'll get used to it.
Yeah, I suppose I will. Come on, I will be late for supper.
Taking kidney pie and champagne, eh, Dick? I bet if anyone had told you a fortnight
ago. No, you're right.
Would you like some more to drink?
No, he wouldn't, and neither would you. Get up to bed, girl.
Oh, Nick, why?
Don't argue. Pop off.
Good night, Dick. Sleep well.
Thanks, Sissy. Good night.
And close that door as you go.
Uncle.
Poor little Sissy. Brutal old Nick. Save your breath. I can read you like a book, lad.
Well... You did seem a bit hard on her.
Let's settle this right now. Sissy Mapes has got the best job she's ever had or ever will have. She's in clover.
Well, maybe so, but surely...
What's more, she's only got sense enough to come in out of the rain, if that.
Then why do you employ her?
She's got small bones, very small. She can squeeze herself into half the space the audience thinks she needs. If she couldn't, I'd have been out sharpish. Or did you think she was here just because of what she gives me upstairs?
No, of course not.
And I warn you, when I want my greens, I don't fancy other fellas' leavings. So don't start any messing about there.
You don't need to warn me. To begin with, I'm not interested.
It's too early to say that. She hasn't got to work on you yet. She will. You're a good-looking lad. And she doesn't get enough from me. Besides, they like a bit of sentiment. Oh, for God's sake. Don't look so disgusted. You know the trouble with men like me?
Uncle?
The trouble with a man like me, intelligent, is that he soon gets bored. Everything gets stale. That's why I'm glad you've joined me, Richard. I can talk to you.
Well, I hope so.
Last year, I played 2 weeks at the London Coliseum. One night, an old Hindu came round to see me. A fellow from the India office brought him. He smiled all the time. Never stopped, just kept smiling. And talking, smiling. And talking.
What about?
What about? About India. Of course, I had to tell him I'd never been near the place. Didn't stop him. He sat there and he smiled and he talked. Bloody horrors, mostly. Fire, fury, and bloody murder. And he talked about it like he was a kid at a magic lantern show. And he said something else. I shouldn't have started when I wasn't ready to finish. Some other time, then. We've talked enough for one night. Push off.
Now, just a minute, Uncle.
Push off, I said. And be sharp about it.
Good night.
I was told I had a funny face, so I gave notice at mid-place. Thought I'd go upon the stage. Then I'd earned a decent wage. I sang a song called Boy, Beaver, Garrison, Take Your Umbrella with Your John. With a funny suit of clothes and an old red nose, as soon as I come on, you've gone up laughing, can you? Then you make a laugh, da da.
Almost before I had time to stop and think about anything, a week had passed. On the first house Thursday, while Hislop stood and watched like some infinitely superior schoolmaster with a class of particularly ungifted six-year-olds, I went on in the act for the first time.
Feeling a fool in my Indian makeup and costume.
And I had a few panicky seconds when I reached the brightly lit, searching area of the stage, but I soon recovered. After the performance, I had a surprise.
Well done, lad.
Thank you, sir.
Much better than Hislop. Slapdash young idiot. Ben thinks so too. Glad to be with us.
It was the longest speech I ever heard in May. By the following Sunday, Hislop had gone, departed for the delights of his brother's fish and chip shop. And I was on my own.
Don't shut that door! Here! Come on.
Thanks, Collie, thanks. Thanks. Man about to spend after bleeding night there. Bleeding berwick on tweed. Oh, thank you very much.
Why did you get out?
Wanted to send a wire. No hope. And I lost me tip for end of bargain.
You lost your what, Mr. Ballard?
Oh, don't show your ignorance, Collie. Tit for otherwise, tit for tat, otherwise act. It's special too. West End. Harry G. Barrard. As everything made special. How about a little of what you fancy?
Oh, no, thank you.
Then excuse me, Sir Marmaduke.
I looked again at his eyes. In the daylight, or what little of it filtered through into the dingy third-class compartment, they were a startling yellow ochre, small and suspicious.
So, Cully, how'd you like being in Variety?
Well, it's all right so far.
All right, don't make me laugh. I've had 30 years of it, and I don't recognise it at all anymore. Don't know where I am. Where the hell are we going now, then? Edinburgh, is it?
Yeah.
Thought so. Every bloody Sunday for 30 years. Another train to somewhere or other. If it weren't for the likes of us, the bloody railways are shut down of a Sunday. Where are the rest of your happy band, then?
Uncle Nick and Sissy are motoring up.
All right, for some.
Sam, Ben and Barney, they're playing cards somewhere. I'm sure they'd deal you in if you want.
You're sure of that, are you? What do you think to the women, then, Cully? The women on this delay?
I've only been here a week, Mr. Bernard.
Don't tell me you haven't thought about it. When I was your age, I was a stallion. Still could be. But what is there on this bill, eh, little noni Frenchie? Moss Empire's number one cock tease, that's what she is. You know something?
No, what?
Lots of people think I don't notice much. I notice everything. I see things that you've no notion of, Cully.
What, for instance?
Come here. They're sending people round all the time now.
Who are?
Nobody notices them but me. Of course, it's all done on the quiet. I saw one last night. Front row, big black moustache. I can tell him at a glance. There's one on this train.
One of what?
He knows I've spotted him. He'll send in a report just like they always do. Asking for instructions and they'll come, same as always. Pass on the word. Give Burrard the bird.
I see.
That's why it's all going wrong for me. Top of the bill I used to be. Did you know that, Cully? Me and Dan Leno and Dutch Daly and Albert Chevalier. But now it's third spot, first half. Nothing. And it's all because of them and their bloody secret orders. Give Burrard the bird. Give Burrard the bird. Edinburgh. By the time I'd made sure all our stuff had been taken care of, it was too late to see anything of the place, so I had to be content with the sheer knowledge that I was there, further from home than I'd ever been in my life.
I found the digs I was sharing with Uncle Nick and Sissy, discovered that they didn't believe in putting coal on fires like they did in Newcastle, and finally managed to get to sleep in my clean, bare, cold little room.
Next morning, I was out of the house by 8 o'clock. The weather was raw, but there was some pale sunlight here and there, burnishing the stone with a faint gold.
For an hour or so, I was all painter, wondering how this air and stone, these greys and sepias and sudden blacks, could ever be captured on canvas.
Then I tore myself away from the dream world and back to the more or less real one.
Good morning, Herncastle. Gangadon.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nancy Ellis, Susie Nancy and a gentleman.
I'd been telling myself that I was looking forward to roaming around backstage, getting to know the place and the stage staff and so on. But I suppose it was a lie.
Of course it was a lie. All I really wanted was to see Nancy Ellis again.
And now, here she was. I turned around slowly, as casually as I could.
But she wasn't looking at me.
Are there any letters for us?
I think we're just a minute.
It was the first time I'd seen her face properly, without all the stage makeup. I don't know why, but I'd got into my head that her eyes were blue. They weren't.
Yeah, miss.
They were grey. An unusual grey. Attractive, warm.
Thank you.
Good morning, Miss Ellis. Good morning.
Ah! What did he mean by it? What did he mean?
What? What did he mean?
Ask him a civil question. A perfectly civil question.
Who told you to say that? I asked him. Come on, who told you?
Harry, who are you talking about?
That vicious bastard of a conductor, that's who. Do you know what he said to me?
Of course I don't know.
When you're going to get some new songs? New songs? How much did they pay him, eh? That's what I want to know.
Oh, my God!
Yes, how much? How much?
I'd suddenly realised, wherever his mind might be, if Harry Burrard was standing next to me at the stage door, then he wasn't on stage taking his band call.
And if he wasn't, then I should have been. My first time on my own, and I was going to be late, out of breath, and, thanks to little Miss Nose in the Air, Ellis, in a foul mood.
A fine way to start the week.
Mr. Robinson says, go from my side.
Is your uncle here?
Yeah?
So it's fine to have people going to work, and then I think it's between the relatives.
Look, shouldn't we be getting on?
Need to practice for you, Sonny.
All right, I know I'm new to this.
Really? I've never been
here. Next cue is number 18.
Long enough to climax, play up as ever. You can do it in a sleep. That is just the music that doesn't fall apart first.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Sorry, is it? You better get something to do with it soon, Sonny. I'll be your present uncle.
Look, I said I know it's a problem. I'll talk to him, all right? Now, what about the last cues?
I told you, Sonny, not necessary. Good if you're welcome to come here and ask him.
I'm taking this bank call, not Mr. Ollington. Now, are we going to do it properly or not?
Make that, please.
I want a word of three with
not
you.
Now.
Now. Hey, leave it, leave it. You've been annoying my sister-in-law, Miss Ellis.
It was Bob Hodson, the gentleman.
Gentleman.
From Susie, Nancy and the Gentleman. He had the sort of looks that were much seen on the stage then, but suddenly vanished about 50 years ago. A square face with not much nose and a chin that jutted out as far as it would go.
You've been annoying her, I say.
Annoying her? I've said hello or tried to. She can get over that, can't she?
She doesn't want to speak to you, so keep away from her.
Push your.
How would you like a punch on the nose?
Try it and see.
You just leave her alone.
I didn't feel angry at him, but I was furious with her, running to this idiot with a complaint about me.
Well, this was an end to it. I chased her out of my mind. No more time and attention to be wasted on silly little Nancy Ellis. None.
I thought you took a band call this morning.
I did.
Then what the hell happened? They played my music as if half of them were reading the evening paper, which perhaps you didn't notice.
Of course I noticed. I'm more interested in music than you are. You want less mistakes, you should get some new band parts. Get some better music, too.
You're 20 years old, you know nothing, and you're telling me how to run my act. I'd half a mind to tell you to bugger off.
I'm not trying to tell you how to run your act.
Sounded like that to me.
It's just, I like the act, I'm proud of it, and I want to do everything to make it better.
All right. I believe you.
And it's not just the state of the band parts.
Go on, spit it out.
Look, Uncle Nick, you don't take band calls because you don't like musical directors. Well, they don't like you. So they don't exactly go out of their way to make sure everything's right.
I'm not asking them to like me. I'm asking them to do their work properly. The work they're paid to do, same as I am.
Do you know how much they get compared to you?
Who do you think I've been the last 10 years? Of course I know.
Everybody else looks after the conductors. Why not you?
Don't you dare tell me I should do what everybody else does.
Did you hear anyone else's music getting messed up out there?
Want me to be like your precious Tommy Beamish, do you? Give him drinks, cigars, the odd fiver. Well, I won't do it on principle, and that's...
I did my best this morning. I'll do my best for you every Monday morning. You've got my word on it. What happened wasn't my fault, and I won't be told it was. Don't take it out on me if the conductors don't like your attitude.
That's enough, that's
enough. No, it's not. I may only be 20, and I may be new to everything, but I'm not having this. You gave me this job because you thought I could do it. Well, I can, and I can do it well, if you'd let me get on with it and stop treating me like a schoolboy. Either you admit that, or you fire me. Well, which?
Episode 1 of Lost Empires by J.B. Priestley, dramatised for radio by Bert Cools. Tom Baker played Nick Ollerton, better known as Ganga Dunn, the magnificent Maharaja of mystery. Brian Pringle was O. Richard, and Freddie Davis played Harry G. Burrard, the Diddy Udo man. Richard Herncastle was played by Richard Horrock. Stephen Frost was Tommy Beamish, the Clown Prince of Chaos. And Bridget Forsyth was Julie Blaine, well known in the West End. Nancy Ellis of Susie, Nancy and a Gentleman was Catherine Hunt. Courtney was played by Russell Dixon. Hislop by John Lloyd Fillingham. Sissy by Debbie McAndrew. And Barney by Mike Edmonds. Other parts were played by members of the company. Original music was composed by Chris Monks and performed by David Wendell, Steve Rushton, David Browning and Julia Hanson. Our special thanks to the Oldham Coliseum and the people of Oldham for their contribution during location recording. Lost Empires was directed in Manchester by Kate Rowland.